I was honored when Jeff asked me to speak today. When the preacher's away, he has to get somebody to fill the pulpit. But I know so many of you. I love this church. There are so many things we have done together through the years. We opened with a doxology, and I can't sing the doxology without thinking of Joe Hightower. And we still open our dinners, at least when I'm there, with the doxology. Alex Schrader was in school with me, and now we share the responsibilities of keeping those apartments functioning. So we are the maintenance team down there. Christian Child Help Foundation. I looked at Flossie this morning, and I remember driving our station wagon to Randall's to pick up food for CCHF and going to their house to pick up food that we sold at the church to benefit CCHF and all those dinners and fundraisers and stuff that we did. Going to have lunch with Paul. Lifeline is one of the great victories, I think, here in Houston that's brought all the churches together to support something together. They were housed at our building for many years, and it was an honor to be a part of that, getting it going. The UH campus, you and we at Southwest have struggled through thick and thin and all sorts of ups and downs to keep that ministry going. I would not be the president of the board if I didn't mention we have a dinner coming up in 9 days, and you're welcome to come. We won't charge you a thing to come. Just bring your billfold. We'll be over the Memorial Church of Christ and their Family Life Center on Tuesday night, March the 12th. Dinner will be served at 6:45. Wear your Western duds or whatever. It's not a dress-up thing, and we try to make it as casual and comfortable. It'll be a fun time. Just be sure you let us know you're coming so we don't run out of food. Together, Bering and I have, some of us have been to Israel and back, and we have experienced and learned about our Father together. I was born and raised in Shreveport, Louisiana, and our connections go back much longer, much farther than many of you recognize. I'm amazed at how many people I meet who've been through Shreveport at some time. Many in the oil field were through Shreveport on their way to Houston to do something. My church home at that time was the Lakeshore Drive Church of Christ. Another of the families at Lakeshore Drive was the family of Victor Busey. Victor was the president of the AFL-CIO in Louisiana for 41 years. And it was said that nobody ran for office, especially as a Democrat, in Louisiana without visiting Victor first and getting his blessing. He was also an advocate of civil rights, and it resulted in his home in Baton Rouge being firebombed by the Ku Klux Klan. He had a good-looking daughter, older than I, of course. I say that in case she's listening. Her name was Deanna. And her boyfriend, Bill Love, described to me the first time he went home to meet her parents. That was a scary event. I guess it's like trying to marry the president's daughter. And in shaky knees, you go to meet the great Victor Busey. If you look on Wikipedia, it says he was the most influential non-elected politician in Louisiana at the time. So, our connections go back a long way. Lakeshore Drive was pretty typical of Churches of Christ at the time. Drinking alcoholic beverages was, of course, a cardinal sin, so I never did. a new graduate of ACU with my master's in religion. We moved to England to work with two native preachers and plant a church. Then I learned that my oldest co-worker had a liquor license, so he could buy and sell communion wine. I never liked the taste of that in England. I like Dr. Welch's better. I go to weddings and we have champagne toast and I sip a little bit of it and I just shudder. My body just shakes when I drink it. I guess drinking alcohol is an acquired taste, like drinking coffee. And I've never really liked either one. I learned that mixed swimming was a sin. It was called mixed bathing, but I never dreamed of mixed bathing. It would cause boys to lust. It may surprise you to know I've never learned to swim. I didn't want to sin. So what's the use in learning how to swim if it's going to cause you to sin? My high school girlfriend's family had a boat, and they often went water skiing. They invited me many times. I never accepted. I didn't want to lust. I didn't want to sin. Then we moved to England, and we were part of a group that planned an all-country youth camp for one summer. And at the first meeting, they looked at me and said, "Don't you bring up that Americanism of swimming." So I didn't. I learned their culture and their group had long since passed that. And besides, swimming in the North Sea when it's 40 degrees isn't very stimulating anyway. Even today, I generally avoid beaches, except in the wintertime when they're not populated. I was taught well by my church to look for the tiniest bikini on the beach, and so I've just stayed away from it. I did swim in the Dead Sea, but I don't know if you call that swimming or not. I learned that dancing was a sin. So I never learned to dance. I never went to dances. It was a struggle for me my senior year when I had to go to the military ball. I was an officer and I had to be there. But I left after the introduction. My girlfriend, same one, took dancing lessons. I suppose ballet or modern dance. But I never went to any of her recitals. I didn't want to sin. Dancing's a big part of wedding receptions now. I just sit and watch. Joe and I never developed that rhythm to glide around the floor like some of you can. I didn't know any black children in my youth. I was raised in the days of segregation. The only African American I ever went to school with was my senior year. That was the first year of integration. We had one African-American boy in a high school of 2,500. And we just never had contact. A black couple came to Lakeshore Drive one Sunday, invited by one of our members, and the elders wouldn't let them come in. They told them that they supported a black church in another part of town, and they funded the preacher, and they helped fund the building, and they were welcome to go down there. After all, we had to evangelize the world. But they said something like, "God created every creature after its kind, and you're not our kind." It was in the late 60s in Abilene that I really started to think about civil rights, but still had no natural connection with other races. Mark writes, "Another time on a Sabbath day, as Jesus and his disciples were walking through the fields, the disciples were breaking off the heads of wheat and eating the grain. Some of the Jewish religious leaders said to Jesus, they shouldn't be doing that. It's against our laws to work by harvesting grain on the Sabbath. But Jesus replied, didn't you ever hear about the time King David and his companions were hungry, and he went into the house of God? Abiathar was the high priest then. And they ate the special bread only priests were allowed to eat. That was against the law too. The Sabbath was made for the benefit of man, and not man to benefit the Sabbath. And I, the Messiah, have authority even to decide what men can do on the Sabbath day. While in Capernaum, Jesus went over to the synagogue again, and he noticed a man there with a withered hand. Since it was the Sabbath, Jesus' enemies watched him closely. Would he heal the man's hand? If he did, they planned to arrest him. Jesus asked the man to come up to the front and stand in front of the congregation. Then turning to the enemies, he said, is it right to do kind deeds on Sabbath days? Or is this a day for doing harm? Is it a day to save lives or destroy them? But they wouldn't answer him. Looking around at them angrily, for he was deeply disturbed by their indifference to human need, he said to the man, reach out your hand. He did, and instantly his hand was healed. At once the Pharisees went away and met with Herodians to discuss plans to kill Jesus. We have two sons. I never taught them that drinking alcohol was a sin. I did point out the dangers of drunkenness and alcoholism, but I also pointed out that the scriptures show wine as a great blessing from God, and how Jesus turned water into the best wine possible at a celebration. They enjoy a drink from time to time, but they still don't drink coffee. I did not teach them that swimming was a sin, but instead I took them to the pool and I tried to teach them what I could about how to swim and make sure they could swim and enjoy it. I made sure they had lessons and could enjoy the water with their friends and their families. I didn't say much about dancing. But one of them married a drama queen who loves dance, and two granddaughters are taking dancing lessons. Of course, dancing is a whole new phenomena today from what I thought it was. I've tried to instill color blindness in my boys, and it appears to have taken. We moved 35 years ago to put them in a better school situation, and we picked a high school that was one-third African-American, one-third Hispanic, and one-third Caucasian. We could have chosen a predominantly white high school or a private school, but we didn't. We wanted them to grow up in that multicultural setting. Our oldest grandson's first name is Damon. He's named after his adopted uncle, Damon, who's now a black firefighter that our church adopted when he was an eighth grade illiterate young man. And our church nurtured him through college and married life. It's a sin. Is it a sin to shell peanuts for a snack on the Sabbath? Does that really work? If so, I guess opening the bag is more work than that. Is it a sin to simply speak to a man on the Sabbath? Is that really work? You know, Jesus didn't even touch that man with a withered hand. He didn't do massage therapy. He just said, raise your hand. Does that work? It's very easy to treat the Bible as a set of rules and then expand those rules to more rules in order to be safe. It's easy to create a checklist of things to do and don't, and then feel content that we're pretty good people because, you know, we got most of the good boxes checked. It's easy to make the Sabbath a rigid observance and seek to bring back blue laws, and as long as it doesn't apply to restaurants. And it's also easy to throw out the Sabbath altogether and say it has no application to us anymore. And I don't think Jesus would do either one. Jesus asked if the Sabbath is a day for saving lives or destroying them. Is any day a day for destroying lives? Jesus was angry and deeply disturbed by the so-called religious being indifferent to human needs. It's easy for us to smirk about the rigidity of the past, to talk about the curfews at the dorm and stuff like that. Do we have rigid teachings in the present? Or have we chosen an anything goes situation? Are we throwing out all the rules in favor of love and acceptance and tolerance? The Pharisees' hatred of Jesus is inherently political. Pharisees and Herodians, the religious and the political leaders, join hands in being the ruling power. How intertwined are our politics and our religion? And is that good? What would Jesus do about the 200,000 people who come across our southern border each month? What would our Israeli Jesus say about the 30,000 who've been killed in Gaza? How would Jesus treat the LGBTQ community? Would Jesus have marched with George Wallace or Martin Luther King? Where is Jesus marching today? What does Jesus have to say about the great gulf between wealth and poverty in Houston? While the Pharisees are concerned about whether or not a man can be healed on the Sabbath, or whether or not you can pluck a little bit of grain and snack on it as you walk along, Jesus is deeply disturbed about the indifference of these outspoken religious to the poverty and the need around them. So Jesus did something. He knew people were watching him. He knew people wouldn't like it. He knew his life was on the line. But he did something. So on the Sabbath, the day you're not supposed to work, here are the Pharisees and the Herodians in the back room plotting to kill him. Is that legitimate on the Sabbath?
Amen.